We have one last chapter of the Proverbs gathered in the days of King Hezekiah. So let's turn to Proverbs chapter 31 today. Hezekiah was a man known to be the greatest of the kings of Judah, and therefore the greatest of the kings of Israel. And he was a man devoted to wisdom. And so he had these additional sections added to Solomon's original book of Proverbs. Most of them, chapters 25 through 29, came from Solomon himself. But chapter 30 was from Agur, and now chapter 31 comes from a guy known as King Lemuel. So Proverbs 31 says, "The words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him." Now you can look through the history of Israel and you will not find a King Lemuel. So this appears to be a symbolic name. Now some people think that it might be a reference to Solomon. I don't think so. I am actually of the opinion, and others share this opinion, that it is King Hezekiah himself who is in mind. Lemuel in Hebrew means to God. So these are the words apparently either spoken by the king to God or, and I like this one better, the words of God spoken to the king. And this is an oracle, a burden, if you will, that is something that is carried from one point to another. This is a burden that was given to him by his mother. So if this is in fact Hezekiah, her name is Abiah. She is the daughter of Zechariah, and apparently a good lady, because she gave him solid advice. And I think that might be why he places this at the end of the book, in a climactic point, as a tribute to his mom. Verse number 2. "What are you doing, my son? What are you doing, son of my womb? What are you doing, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, your ways to those who destroy kings." Now, that's one of the reasons I think that some people think that this is Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, that is the one that's giving this advice, because she was seeing her son go crazy with adding marriage after marriage and concubine arrangement after concubine arrangement, and it ultimately destroys him. And I can appreciate that as a potential understanding of this. But the same advice could have been given to Hezekiah, who was living in a time of Judean history where it was still common practice for the Jewish kings to marry more than one wife as a means of controlling political connections. And so mom may have in fact been saying, "Don't do that. You know that's not what God wants for you. That's going to destroy you if you only look at this from a political viewpoint." And then verse number 4, she moves on to a different topic. "It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to take strong drink, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and pervert the rights of the afflicted. Give strong drink to the one who is perishing and wine to those who are in bitter distress. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more." So the warning here from mom to son is, don't drink. I think to excess is implied here. Because you've got responsibilities. You need to be clear-headed when you are considering the matters of the kingdom. You've got to have your head screwed on straight in order to make fair declarations and not cheat people. The people that might benefit from the central nervous system depressive effect of alcohol would be those that are already on their way out of life. That is, those who are dying and might need the deadening effect, the pain relief effect of it, or those who find themselves horribly distressed and maybe they need some sleep. So she says, leave it to those people that are not in the process of making big decisions. Instead, you need to do this. Verse 8, open your mouth for the mute, that is, who can't speak for themselves. For the rights of those who are destitute, those who don't have the political power, perhaps, that comes with position. Or some have suggested that maybe the Hebrew here is those who are on their way out already. Those who are passing away in the sense of either they've lost all of their resources and maybe even they're dying. And so you need to speak up for them as the king. Because remember, the king was the executive officer of the kingdom of God, the kingdom of Israel. God was the ultimate king on the throne of Israel. And so the human king was supposed to be making sure everything was done fairly. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and the needy. So the responsibility of people in leadership, whether they are an individual at the top of leadership or they're all the others that kind of cooperate together as leaders, their responsibility is to see to the rights of the people. I think about the book of Romans, chapter 13, that says that all of the governing authorities are put in place by God to do two things: to reward those who do the right thing and to punish those who do the wrong thing. And so that's what mom here is telling her son, the king, Lemuel, the one that's supposed to be listening to the words of God. This is what you need to be taking care of. And then we come to the part of the chapter that most people associate with Proverbs 31. And I want to devote this section to my own wife that I consider to be representative of this, a hardworking lady who has done so much and sacrificed so much for me, for our son, and for the people around her, the people in the church. She is my excellent wife. And may the Lord bless you, Deb. Verse number 10. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. See, a good wife is a gift from God. That's the truth. Verse 11, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Marriage is a partnership, and each partner needs to be looking out for the other one. And since this is being written by a guy, then he is acknowledging the worth of his wife and how she completes his life and protects him. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. Now, this section is all couched in the language and the culture of, I think, the late 8th century BC. So the 700s BC. So that even in the household of a highly placed person in society, the woman who was in charge of the household would engage in the activities of making things. Stores, like we think of them, didn't exist back at that time. Sure, you could go down to the shop and purchase things, but typically you were purchasing components that you would then take home and make into something for use at home. So this lady, this wise lady, she goes out and she looks through the raw wool and the raw flax that is available to take home and make into fabric, which would then be made into clothing. Verse 14, she's like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. So she's going out and buying all the components needed to make meals, not just simply for herself and her husband and her kids, but she's actually overseeing a big household. This is a place that has many, many people employed in the household. So she's trying to basically keep a restaurant going. Verse 15, she rises while it is yet night, so very early in the morning, and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. So she's up and making sure that the restaurant has everything ready to go for breakfast to kick off the day. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. So this woman is, she's a business lady. She's out there buying fields so that she can actually raise some of the things that she needs for her household. And so she takes her own money and she invests it in a field. And then, of course, that field produces and she's got more than enough so she can sell off the excess. And then from that, she goes out and she buys a vineyard. She invests her money in that so that she's got both the grapes and the raisins that are raised for her own household's use, but she's also got enough for the wine to lay in place for her household and excess that she can sell of all these products. So she is making plans for the future for her family. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. So she's not a wimp. She is a strong lady. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. All the stuff that we've been talking about. She knows she's got stuff of value because she's putting the effort into it and working. She is a business lady. As I said, she's basically running a restaurant. She's running a hotel. She's running an agricultural concern. She's involved in a shopper's business. She's doing all of this with a profit. Her lamp does not go out at night. So she's up early in the morning and she's still doing stuff at night. What's she doing? Well, here in verse 19, it says she puts her hand to the distaff and her hand holds the spindle. That doesn't make sense to most of us nowadays because we go and buy our clothing off the rack at Walmart or Target or some other place. She's actually taking the raw wool that we were talking about earlier and the raw flax that we were talking about earlier, and she is turning it into thread. She's turning it into fabric. And then from the fabric, she's making the clothing. She and the people working for her, because like I said, she's got a staff. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. So she's a godly lady. She's not just doing this for selfish reasons. She's trying to take care of herself, her family, her staff, and she knows that in her community, There are some people who, through no fault of their own, have fallen on hard times, and they need to be taken care of. So she's reaching out to them too. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. So that's a way of saying that she does the best, even for the people working for her, to make sure that they are warm in the winter. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. So she's not putting this all on as some sort of promotion of herself. It's just that she has the materials at hand to clothe herself well. So she's a fashionable lady, is what it's saying here. She's looking good. Verse 23, her husband is known in the gates where he sits among the elders of the land. Now, we don't know what all he does. He might be involved in agriculture. He might be involved in husbandry practices. He might be involved in business pursuits of other sorts. Or he might be in a leadership role somewhere. This part of it, though, is a leadership role. Even if he's involved in other concerns, he is showing up at the gate of the city and being part of those that make judicial decisions for the rest of the city. He's part of the elders of the land. And sometimes the elders were like volunteers that would help make judicial decisions. So he's a good guy too. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. So here she is in another business deal. She is taking excess clothing that she's been making and selling it. And they look good. And so she's making money off of that as well to bring into her household. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. That is, she's not afraid of the future because she knows that she's been preparing for that and taking good care of the people around her. And that's also speaks to her character. She is a strong character, and she's a dignified character. She's a godly woman. And that means she's passing those qualities on. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. So she is passing all of this character on to the next generations. She's talking to her kids about it. She's talking to her employees about it. She's talking to her community members about it. Verse 27, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. So she's not sitting around eating bonbons and expecting everybody else to do things for her. She's out there trying to look out for other people. And because of that, this is what happens. Verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed. So her kids say, I love my mom. I love how she cared for me and sacrificed for me and did what was best for me, taught me the things of God. I love her, and she is an honorable lady that needs to be bragged about. And verse 28, her husband also, and he praises her. Husbands, you need to brag on your wife. You need to tell them how much you appreciate them and what they do. And let other people know that she is your best friend and your hero, because that is going to make her feel loved. Verse 29, many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. So, my love, I've known a lot of ladies that have done a lot of good stuff, but you're the one that I think is my hero. What a great thing to be able to say to your wife. Verse number 30. Charm is deceitful. Now, charm here, I think, is in the sense of an outward appearance of what a person's like. Because sometimes that's just a front. Sometimes that's just a put-on outward mask. So charm can be deceitful, and beauty can be vain. That is, it can be empty. Sometimes ladies, since we're talking about ladies, that's what we're going to go with, it can be true for guys too, have covered up all of the negative parts of their outward appearance with makeup, with cosmetics. So that can be kind of false. But this is one thing that's not going to be false. A woman who fears he who is to be praised. When you have a God-fearing woman, that's real. And she needs to be acknowledged as such. Verse 31. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. If you've got a Proverbs 31 woman as your wife, you need to let her know that. And you need to let her enjoy the fruit of all her activities. You need to step in and let her enjoy her life as well as letting other people enjoy their lives. She's the one that puts in all the work. Don't let her be the only one that does that, and that she never misses out on some of the rest and recuperation that needs to come. And she ought to be bragged on, not just simply privately. I mean, it's great to tell your wife how much you appreciate her, but you also need to make sure that you say those things out loud in front of other people. That is a present that can go a long ways in building up your relationship. So husbands, let me speak to you again very plainly. You've got a gem of a woman that you're married to. I am convinced that is true for the vast majority of you that I am talking to. And it's also possible, very likely, that she is underappreciated. Change that. You get in there and make sure she knows how much you appreciate her. Too many times, marriages end up in divorce because the husbands, in particular, are not letting their wives know how much they appreciate them. So don't let that happen in your own marriage. Proverbs 31 is now finished. Book of Proverbs is now completely finished. But we still have one more book in the wisdom literature of the Old Testament that we haven't looked at. And that would be the book of Ecclesiastes. And I told you a couple of different times now that we were saving it until we got to the time of King Hezekiah, because I am of the opinion that the book of Ecclesiastes was written by King Hezekiah. And I know that that is not the majority opinion in the academic world. There are some that take that stance, but very few. But I think it is true nonetheless. And so I'm going to do my best over the next few lessons to try to convince you that this is the midlife journal of King Hezekiah. I will tell you this, though. There's really only two kings that fit the internal evidence of this book, and that is King Solomon and King Hezekiah. Because whoever wrote this book has to be king at Jerusalem, and that's true for both of them, a son of David, That's true for both of them. He has to be someone that is very wealthy. And that is actually true of Hezekiah, just like it was of Solomon. And it has to be someone who is connected to wisdom. And that is, as we can see, true of Hezekiah, just as it was of Solomon, because we've seen how King Hezekiah made sure that there were additions added to the book of Proverbs published by King Solomon back in his day. Now, there are some distinctive differences between these two men, though, and I think that's one of the really big reasons for me seeing Hezekiah as the writer of this book. King Solomon started out great and was very much devoted to God and wisdom, but he abandoned God and finished badly. And when we look at the narrative sections of the historical books, the last thing we read about him is that he is persecuting people sent to him by God. And that's not good. I think he ends in rebellion against God. King Hezekiah, however, was the greatest of all the kings in Jerusalem. He did have a few little blurps or blips on his relationship, but he ends strongly. And I think that's exactly what we see in this book. Someone who has some tough times, but ends up with this insistence that we have to be committed to God's word and trust God, because he is the final judge of everything that we do. The vocabulary, by the way, in the book of Ecclesiastes is very much closer to the vocabulary of the late 8th century BC. And I think that's another good reason. So come back tomorrow and we will kick off our study of the book of Ecclesiastes.